Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. Nathan Spearing here, bringing you this episode on the tactical household. What you're about to hear was originally published by me on X, the best social media platform from where I stand by a long shot. I've been putting a lot of effort into putting out content on X because that same content that I have put out on other platforms just isn't getting the traction that it is getting on a merit-based platform. So make sure you go over and follow me at The Spearing on X and enjoy this discussion on the tactical household.
And I've been involved in a lot of U.S. government operations, and quite frankly, I was disappointed. I felt ineffective. The bureaucracy, I've said this before, I was in the most elite unit in the least bureaucratic and most effective government agency, and I felt like it was characterized by dysfunction. And one of the pivotal moments that I had was being deployed overseas in an embassy and watching my children open their Christmas presents on video remotely, and also at the same time getting micromanaged by my commanding officer in Department of Defense side of things. It wasn't the State Department, it wasn't CIA, it wasn't any of those types of agencies that sometimes get a bad rap. It was my own chain of command kind of inhibiting what I was doing. And I kind of just thought to myself, well, if I'm going to be having to travel and not be effective, then I might as well get out. So I got out in 2016. We had been doing some real estate on the side. I started my construction business, and we're now in our eighth year of business, and my eighth year being out of the military. December of this year, I think, makes eight years mark of getting out of the military. So it was very difficult for me after doing kind of the super sexy things that movies are made out about or being around some of the people that are doing some of those cool things, and then being in small town America with my five children struggling to run a business. Over the last almost 8 years now, I feel like the Lord has been just sanctifying me of some professional idolatry and continue to focus me locally on what I'm doing here with my family, and realizing that matters more, and in some ways eternally matters, over the super sexy missions or the cool guy status that I enjoyed for almost 14 years of my professional life. And so, you know, this space is now kind of recapping that story, is even just reminding myself now that raising my family, loving my wife, building a small business that provides a good service to, doesn't even need to be a lot of people, just a small number of clients, is enough in some sense. I think that the proverb says the fool's eyes are on the ends of the earth. And so, you know, I'm encouraging you here now listening, but also just kind of speaking to myself to continue to focus locally in what we're doing. And originally intended to launch right into this space and to start talking about the practical and the tactical things that we're doing on a family level. But we had prayer meeting at our church tonight, and I just was reflecting on how I have community. I have other families that I see 3 to 4 times a week, that our kids are hanging out with each other, our wives are talking with each other, we're hanging out in the lobby of the church for 45 minutes to 3-4 hours after church, just talking, getting caught up on things, sharing experiences from the week. And that we have been at this church since September 2009. So I think we're almost at our 15-year mark here, being in the same church, being with a lot of the same families, 4 of my 5 children being baptized there, and just kind of that being all that they know as a community in a sense. And that is their their social time, that is their friend group, that is their bigger family that they belong to, and they look forward to it. They long to be at the gathering of the church and with their friends. And so I would encourage those of you that are listening, one of the things, my first deployment to Afghanistan, we spent almost the entire time living out of Humvees. This is way before the IEDs were prevalent. We actually had plywood zip tied to the roll bars of our Humvees, which are the Jeeps that the Army guys drive around. So off-roading and driving around doing kind of mounted roving patrols in Afghanistan for the entire rotation. And we were always essentially outside the wire, as they say. We were always out, open to threat, and we were pulling guard 24/7. So we would kind of do our movements during the day, and we'd come back and we'd set up a patrol base with the vehicles, and we were sleeping in sleeping bags, but we would pull guard. And I can remember, you know, the guard shifts. There's multiple of us on guard at a time, watching the different ways that the enemy could approach. It was difficult to pull guard for 2 hours with another guy in the Humvee turret in the middle of the night. And, you know, a lot of what a tactical household has to have is a community. It has to have a network of people that they can rely on. And that doesn't happen instantaneously. That's not something that you can run down to Walmart and pick up or order on a website. Building community is hard. Building community requires you to be committed for the long haul. It requires you to overlook people's flaws. It requires other people to overlook yours. It requires you also being willing to be open, honest, and transparent. And when you do almost 15 years with people, you can't keep it covered in a thin veneer if what's underneath is rotten, and people will find out where you mess up and what you struggle with, and they will be able to know who you really are. Some people, when that vulnerability, when that veneer is no longer able to keep people from seeing what's underneath, don't like that feeling, and we joke about it, they'll miraculously find some minor doctrinal issue that they have with the church, or get offended about something and make it about somebody else and move to the next church down the road, move geographically. And, you know, the reality is that getting it close with people is uncomfortable. It's that you have to push through. And then the result also needs to be fix yourself, to become a better person, to become more disciplined, to put sin to death, to be able to say that you're sorry and confess and repent and continue to work through issues together. And the result of that is amazing community. And so that, I think, is one of the hardest things to do as a tactical household, is to have, you know, the military, we call it, it's adjacent units. It's other families, it's other households in the same geographic area that are working towards a common mission. And if you don't have that where you are right now, if you're listening to kind of that description of what I'm saying, and you don't have that, that needs to be a top priority. If you're trying to build a tactical household, you need to be finding that group of people for the church that is aligned with your beliefs, but ultimately aligned with scripture. And then you adjust your beliefs and align it to the word of God, and attend and be there and show up whenever the doors are open and do all the functions and be all in. As I see what is going on around, it's chaotic and it's unsettling at the national, global level. But immediately I can smile and be happy because I have community here. I have 300 or so people that I'm around on a regular basis that know me. I have a family that would be, I guess, even farther back than just finding a church, is finding a spouse, a husband or a wife that you can be aligned with. If you're single and you're out there trying to figure it, like, that is the greatest thing. You're not really building your own household without the ability to have kids. And that started for me almost 18 years ago. My 18-year anniversary is going to be Monday of when I got married. And these are the kind of, these are the long-term strategies that AI and global corporations and the deeps aren't able to replicate. They aren't able to replicate a husband loving his wife like Christ loves the church and leading his children and not provoking them to wrath and cultivating a godly virtue in his life and raising them in a way that they want to replicate what he is doing in their own family, that they want, they have a positive view of marriage, that they love their family life, and that they want to go and find someone to get married and start their own family. And that, I've said this before, in my mind, is kind of like Bitcoin for society. We have all these independent nodes running on the same standard that is the Word of God. We are replicating, we're building, we're creating other human beings from scratch and enjoying it, enjoying the process, and raising them and continuing to build more households. And as I look at what's going on, as I see the state of things, my children, my children's children, my great-grandchildren are going to be around and, Lord willing, serving the Lord and doing things locally and building families way beyond the powers that be right now. And that is going to continue to turn over, but faithful families working where they are is going to be the thing that outlasts everything. And, you know, being in a network of other families that I trust and that love our family is huge. And I have a 15-year-old son, down to 8-year-old son. So we have five children. That is a long-term investment. Having children, raising them, spending and gathering resources so that you can feed and clothe them and educate them is a long-term commitment that most people are not making, that I am not seeing, that subscribe to some of the ideologies and hostile things that are kind of antithetical to what my family and I believe. They're not happily married and having lots of kids. But there's 150 plus children, 18 and under, at our church right now. And that's an incredible capacity for good and for continued growth and continued influence over time. But the tricky part is living your life in such a way as a husband, as a father, that they don't hate your guts because you're hypocritical. And, you know, so making sure that you're around these people that can call you out, that can and actually help you become a person that is righteous and that is living in a good way. Now, there's a million ways to unpack that. There's a million ways to work that out. But doing that in community, doing that underneath other people, being having mentors, being in submission to God leadership, and then having a good wife for me that will call out graciously, privately call out where she thinks that I need to change, and me being able to listen to my wife's input and to be humble about that, my wife being submissive and understanding how to let me lead and also let me take risks, to let me start businesses, to leave a steady paycheck of the military and start our own business, to be in year three now of bus life on land so that we could get to a position generationally where we want to be, and to carve out a place for grandchildren and great-grandchildren to come back to. And that's hard. That's not going to be easy. That's not going to, you're not, if you're going to build something like that, if you're going to try to strike out and try to set a new course for your future generations, it's going to be met with resistance. It's going to be difficult. It's not going to be easy, to leave that Defense Department direct deposit. And so just encourage you to after establishing a family, after building community, the next thing that you have to be able to do is to gather the resources. And so getting, you know, those of you that are employed, my guidance is to try to devote all marginal time that you can to becoming more valuable to your employer, to get more skill, to get more ability in your own time, even if necessary, to increase your value to your employer and to put you in a position to do one of two things. To one, ask for a raise from your employer legitimately, because your employer knows that it's going to be harder to find somebody else that's doing the exceptional level of work that you're doing. And then, or three, negotiate for the pay to stay the same, but to get more time, especially if one of you, if you're inclined to entrepreneurial activities, to take that additional time that you can get without a cut in pay because you're now more valuable. And one of the examples could be maybe a half day a week and saying, hey, I'd like to work 36 hours or I'd like to work 32 hours a week. And if you're a valuable employee, if you're making yourself invaluable to that employer, then as somebody who employs people, that you are going to be able to negotiate, because they're going to have to try to find somebody else to fill the position. And they already know you're honest and good working, valuable. And then you take that additional marginal time that, or that you've gotten, or that additional income, and you invest that to get more skill or to get more resources for your family. So practically how that worked out for my family and I left the military, but I left after cashing out the equity on a home that we had remodeled. And I had a 3% interest rate on that equity that I cashed out. I got over $250,000 essentially direct deposited a few months before getting out of the military. And so we ended up kind of doing a pretty risky play and buying a mansion and that needed a ton of work. And so we were basically down. I've posted kind of a chart of our family's resources. The few months after getting out of the military, we went from, you know, $260,000-$270,000 in the bank to about 10 grand in the bank in 3 or 4 months, just with starting the business, buying additional properties and things like that. And we had two mortgages. I had to pay my enlistment bonus back to the military. So even though we had a ton of resources and kind of had a plan, some things changed and I had to start the business a little bit quicker than I expected. And it was harder than I expected, but looking back, I would do it again. I don't think I would have had the guts to do it if I would have known how hard it was before, but with the hindsight being what it is, 100 times out of 100, I'm leaving the military. You know, people telling me, oh, just 6 more years and you can get a retirement for life. You know, we're having people check in on our short-term rental that a single weekend stay is a month retirement check. And so there's just, don't buy the line of Pharaoh that is trying to get you to break more straw or make more bricks with the same amount of straw, that's increasing your quota, that's always trying to do it. Now, that be a valuable employee, get trade your time for money, but then be very intentional about how you're investing it. And ultimately what that has meant for our family is it means that we have 54 acres with animals and we're building a house and we've been in a bus for 3 years, because essentially 3 or 4 different times we had the option to play it safe and to keep the money in the bank and get off the gas and kind of live the comfortable suburban life. And we essentially went all in again. And in a sense, it kind of feels really crazy right now with a almost framed house, being in the bus for the 3rd year now, but then walking up this morning with the milk pails as the sun's rising, milking our cow. It's a hard life, but it's a good life. And our kids are learning how to work and we're applying ourselves, and there's actually produce coming from our land. Now, you know, the notes that I would have on those of you that may be thinking about, oh, I want to buy land, I want to do the homestead thing, realize that you don't need as much land as you think you do. You know, it is way better to have, I've heard Joel Salatin say this before, it's way better to have a smaller amount of acreage close to town than vast acreage way out of town. That if you're, especially if you're trying to do commerce and to do things, if you're having to travel that far to get to the city. Now, that's not me advocating for big city life. We are in outside of a small town in a county with a little over 100,000 people, but we're 5 minutes from church. We're 5 minutes from downtown. And it's just, you know, we initially bought the 20 acres and have expanded our border. Don't think you need land to start trying to grow food and to start trying to produce. I've heard Joel Salatin talk about just get a tomato plant. Like there is actual learning that is going to take place if you try to grow one plant that is going to bring food, or get six chickens if you're downtown. If you're in a HOA or in a township that's tyrannical and doesn't allow you to have six chickens, then go figure out how to get a disability or some kind of social animal so that you can defy that tyrannical rule of not having your own chickens and start small. We did one batch of meat birds in our downtown house, and we kept some egg chickens as well. And the amount of learning that has to happen when you first get a flock of chickens, and we didn't even get that many. So where are you right now? What can you do right now that will allow you to start learning to produce something that will offset your dependency in a marginal way and will also give you skill? And then as you have mastered that skill or where you are right now at that level, then go bigger and incrementally get more land, get more complex. We've been out on land, as I said, almost 3 years. And we just now got a milk cow, and we definitely shouldn't have gotten it any sooner than we did. And I wasn't even ready. Those of you that follow along on here, I had to put in almost 700 feet of fence and build the barn and figure out how we're going to do water and all that stuff in about 2.5 days. It was some breakneck speed of amount of work that needed to be done. That's the flip side of that coin too, is don't let the plan, don't let the perfectness of the plan or the risk be what stops you from taking the risk and going for it. You are not going to build the legacy that you're supposed to build for your family easily. It is an uphill fight. And if you get off the gas, you're trying to roll that stone up the hill. If you slack off, if you step away, the tendency is for that stone to roll all the way back down to the bottom. So it's not going to be one of those things that you're like, oh, I just need to rest for a couple months or whatever. Just we're put here to work, stay on the gas, and do what you need to do, and realize that it's for the rest of your life. This isn't to get to a certain point and then quit and retire. This is to continue to build. The type of work might change, the way that you use your body or your knowledge and your skill may ebb and flow through time as you work through this, but keep on that trajectory, have that vision, especially with your wife being on the same page, and continue to push. We set this trajectory, I said kind of in the post, 18 years ago, we set the trajectory because I committed to be married to one woman the rest of my life and to be faithful to her and to lead her. And that, as a 23-year-old, is kind of a significant thing to do. And those of you that maybe don't know my story, I was in special operations unit and was vocal about the fact that I was a Christian that didn't cuss and didn't drink and that was a virgin. And I introduced myself that way when I showed up to Ranger Battalion. And so committing myself to living a certain way, being faithful to one woman, raising children, that trajectory got set for us 18 years ago, even 4.5, 5 years prior, pursuing her to marry her, and then continuing having the ability and the resolve to leave active duty service, even though it was a very good paycheck and dependable and a really fun job, and to do something that's not really that glorious. I mean, construction and remodeling is not what Jack Carr writes novels about. So it can be difficult to go from a Jack Carr novel life to construction. But like I said at the beginning, I'm focusing on my wife and my children and my community. But as I see the world continuing to be this way, I'm really glad that I have my special operations service and mindset and experience, and the fact that I have been shot at, and the fact that I've had to figure my way out of some pretty hairy situations. I feel totally prepared mindset wise and where I am geographically, the community that I'm in, the relations that I have, and also what I have equipment wise and the way that I've set our homestead up and the way that I've set up the different places around town, real estate, things that we have, to be anti-fragile, to be ready for whatever is going to happen, and to read articles. I'm not sure if you guys saw, Ray Dalio has an article, I think in Time, called The Coming Conflict. And he has some excerpts from his book. Some of it's a little bit heady and financial in nature, but essentially the premise of things is that, and he's predicting a greater than 50% chance of civil war. Now, does that mean it's going to be a hot civil war? No, he mostly thinks it's going to be a cold civil war. And the way that he describes it is that as the government is not able to finance its debt or to use debt to finance its expenditures, that eventually they're not going to be able to do that anymore. And so we're going to see in one way or another the reduction of government services at the higher levels, more so than maybe the lower levels, and the fact that you're where you are geographically is going to matter more as you continue to seek out places that have the local government services that you need and the local atmosphere. And so he predicts there's going to be a lot of movement. We've actually kind of seen some of that even in the last few days with Elon Musk saying, you know, the government's doing this in California, so I'm going to uproot and move to Texas. As I read that article, I'm not moving. And it's nice to evaluate the county that I'm in, the church that I'm a member of, the place that I am geographically, where my land is and what we're doing, and read articles that in some ways may be a little bit doom and gloom, saying that the sky is falling, but to in a large way say, I've been preparing for this for 20 years. My military service, the fact that I have a wife and children, that we've got land, that we're in community with people that are like-minded, we're in the right place geographically, the right county. It's a blessing. It's not something that I mastermind when I was a teenager, but it is something that has come about by having a vision and being intentional about where I'm trying to take my family. So if you haven't done that, if you haven't figured out this is what we're trying to do as a family, this is why God put each and every one of us together in this unit that is a family, where we are right now geographically, and you're not being intentional about how you spend your time and how you're allocating or amassing resources and reinvesting them, you need to make a change, and you need to work on that, and you need to have a meeting. We did January 1st or 2nd here at the farm. We got a big whiteboard out, and we went through each person in the family, youngest to oldest, and had everyone in the family say what we thought their unique contributions were to our family and how God had gifted them and why we were glad they were in there. We wrote them all down. I think that's important to have children understand early that they're not just a negative, that they're actually contributing. They're part of what we're doing. They're part of this vision. They're working. And boy, am I understanding that right now as I am on, I think, day 5 now of tending the farm while my wife and children are at a string camp, intensive string camp this week. So milking the cow, moving water and feeding chickens, moving water and feeding pigs, dogs, collecting eggs, doing all the cleanup after milking, before I start my construction job, before I start working on trying to build our house, and realizing how much our children contribute to the work. And when I am forced to do all of what my my five children and my wife help me do day in and day out to keep the farm running. I am realizing the amount of work power and capacity for work that we have within our own household. That requires a culture of work. And I say to my kids all the time, what's the most important thing besides love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, is know how to work. Look for ways that you can do that now and give them responsibility, and, you know, realizing that you have to inspect, that you have to train, that you have to mentor, that they're not going to be able to do excellent work, and that their inadequacies in work, their inability to do these things, is going to, in a lot of ways, be an amplification of your own shortcomings and your own sin. And so you can use that as an opportunity to repent for how you've fell short, and to have a conversation with them about it, and to direct them towards capacity for work. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that's 90% of the battle. All those things that I've talked about to this point. Now, I do have on my Twitter bio 3 guns I think every dad should own, free download that I put together. I think that we have in society largely deputized law enforcement to handle security of our family to a fault, to where we don't have the skill or the capacity to defend those that are around us. If you don't have the 3 guns, and that's just the start, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But that being said, I don't have to hide buying guns for my wife. I don't have to try to sell her on me buying stuff like that, because it's not toys. It's not a thing that I'm doing because I'm still a boy and I just want to keep getting more and more toys. I'm buying tools that fit into part of the system of the tactical household, and in a way that is mature. It's not just a hobby.
Real quick, wanted to take a break from the tactical household discussion and let you know that I have launched the Tactical Household private group on thetacticalhousehold.com. You go there, you will get access to a private Telegram channel with me and other men serious about protecting their families, or I guess it's anyone serious about protecting your families, but I'm particularly speaking to men and encouraging them to take dominion. But we are about to do our first live event as well, that we are online event, that we discuss different topics where I'll be sharing information about how our church has foster discussion to make the local community more prepared, more resilient, more anti-fragile. So the actual things that we've done to get people on the same page in our local church. So head over to tacticalhousehold.com, check out the group, and let's get back to the regular discussion.
Now, is it fun to buy these kind of toys and tools and things like that? Yes. But if you're trying to build something, oftentimes you're having to be very strategic in how you're allocating those funds. I also have on my website free guide for starting blue collar business. For me, that's what I do. There's a huge void or dearth of skilled trades and people that actually know how to work with their hands that are manifesting themselves concretely in the world. I feel like there's tremendous opportunities for a side hustle and or main hustle in the trades. And I'm counseling my sons to look at it very intentionally. And as a construction business owner, I have to use my technical background with web and social media and email and marketing and systems to be able to do scheduling for clients, all the different things that are required to run your own business. So in a lot of ways, the actual service and the actual thing that you do is just a small part. I would say you have to be 100% competent at it, 100% skilled, but it's probably only 10% of the picture, maybe 20%. The other 80% is business. The Blue Collar Launch Guide's been my initial offering to help give a framework for someone who wants to start their own business. It's just got a trade-based focus, but I think that the beginning about LLCs and S-Corps and taxation and what professional services and things are helpful, whether it's blue collar or trades or not. And in a lot of ways, becoming professionally competent and able to earn money is huge. Abraham, we read in Genesis 14:14, he had 318 trained men born in his household. And in that day and age, that meant that there was enough agricultural activities to support them and to feed them and their wives and children. And when his nephew Lot got hauled off into captivity, they did a expeditionary hostage rescue, nighttime hostage rescue, I believe, when even the kings of the land couldn't execute the mission. In that day and age, they understood that there was a need to be have multi-disciplined people within your household. That's something that you get time and you're able to cross train in these other things, especially if you don't have a background in special operations where you spent 14 years shooting and doing jiu-jitsu and lifting weights and all those kinds of things. You're going to have to carve out a lot of time to get a certain level of proficiency and mastery in that. And you buy that free time with money. You buy it by being a highly paid, skilled worker in your job, and by then reallocating those resources and buying the time and the instruction and the tools to do these other things that are going to enable you to protect your family. And, you know, guns could be kind of the sexy thing that we want to go to as guys, but the food aspect, I think, is almost more important. The ability to get clean drinking water, the ability to not need to go to the store for a 2 to 3 week period of time if there is chaos and unrest, and viewing every time that there's a power outage, a storm, or whatever, as an opportunity to check and to rehearse and to go through what your systems are in place for kind of a self-sufficiency. And then realizing that if it's just you and your bunker and your bags of rice, that you're probably not going to be able to make this work for very long. That's when you're going to have your extended community. Those of you that have ever grown food and done farming understand how many different pieces come into play to be really, truly self-sufficient at farming is incredibly difficult. And so you're going to need other families to work. You're going to need other families with overlapping and complementary skill sets and resources that you can rely upon, that have a moral framework that you can depend upon in times of crisis, that they're not just going to kill your whole family and take all your resources as soon as you pass out after pulling a 2-hour guard shift, like we talked about earlier. You're going to need those resources, and you're going to need to be in a local area where your local government and leadership is principled and understands the doctrines of lesser magistrate and are serious about leading and getting help and being able to lead in the times of crisis. I think if you do just a good assessment of what your sheriff was doing during the 2020 craze and how they responded to the higher echelons of authority, how they led, is a really good indicator of what you have and where you are. So three guns, a guide that I have for free, the blue collar launch guide. This is a long-term commitment for those of you that are just kind of getting into the space or that are a little bit, you know, what should I do? My kind of first thing that I did was buy a bunch of the kind of 1 month food packs that are freezer dried. This is before I had a farm. My goal was to have 2 to 3 weeks of ability to just kind of shelter in place if there is chaos. And I built that framework because I responded to Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. I was the security advisor for a telecommunications company down there. I actually landed in Puerto Rico, I think 2 or 3 days after the hurricane went through. Pretty much the entire island was still out of power. 3 weeks, I think, I was down there, and I got to watch kind of a microcosm of how society functions when there is no power, no cell phone, when you can't go to the ATM when power's out. You can't go and get cash out. All the gas pumps aren't working. The ability to pay for stuff, refrigeration is working a little while if you have generators and fuel and things like that. But after a while, refrigeration goes out and the shop owners were bringing their propane griddles out onto the sidewalk and basically cooking all the meat at one time and selling it off to people kind of as fast as they could. I came in the first 48 to 72 hours after Maria came through, right before I got to the island. They said that's when the looting and the violence and thing were pretty intense because there was kind of this initial shock of a storm and this upending of the social norms. And then after that, things settled in. And generally, if things are to get worse, that's kind of my own personal premise, is that it could get worse, but then it's going to level out because we still have people that are living next to each other. And there is a divinely inspired soul in these people. There's a desire for freedom, a desire to continue to cultivate. And so communities are going to get reorganized and are going to figure things out. But you don't want to be the one that has to run down to Walmart or run down to the grocery store or Lowe's or someplace to try to get the last generator. You want to have all that stuff positioned. There was a power grid attack in my county, Moore County here in North Carolina. I think it was a year and a half ago in December that actually took power out for the entire county. They hit two substations, and it's not an isolated thing. It's going to actually happen to a couple different places. We had just butchered 50 chickens and put them in the freezer. And I was home in Alabama with my parents for Christmas celebration. And then we got the word that power was out here. I had just been moving chickens around the pasture for 8-9 weeks. And we butchered them as a family and put them in the freezer. And you can't really, I probably could have called and got somebody at church to go and talk them through my system and got them to go run the freezers for me. But I essentially took off and drove through the night and got here. I was pretty pumped because that was the first time we had something like that happen, that I didn't need to go get anything to get all my systems online. I didn't have it all wired up, but I had the wire, I had the connectors, I had the plugs, I had the fuel, I had the generator, and I had the time now. I got there and I was able to wire up the pigtail into the breaker, get the generator wired up, and get all our freezers back online and go through and keep them running. Now, we got power back, I think, on the fifth day. So the extended notes that I had from that particular experience was that I needed more fuel, and I also needed enough oil to be able to service the generator. So one of the generators I have recommends a 50-hour change in the oil. So having a case of the right oil and being able to do that. I have Starlink. I think that it's a phenomenal internet solution, specifically because it doesn't take a whole lot of power to run it, and it can be used independent of the grid. And so I was able to, when I ran the generator for about an hour, every couple hours to kind of keep things going and making sure everything stayed frozen, and I would plug the dish in and come up on the internet and coordinate with whoever I needed to during those windows that I was running the generator. And so having that ability to communicate, having the ability to kind of sustain, I have since got a lot more fuel here. We've gotten a lot more power options. I've got a solar option that I've been trying out as we're building the house, like Goal Zero. So I got 800 watt solar panels that go into a pretty good sized battery that has a bunch of different plugs on it. So I've been working through those and feeling like I almost got all the kit ready after 5-6 years of intentionally planning and slowly kind of buying things in the order of necessity. But again, back to that requires the ability to produce, to get resources, to be reallocated towards these kind of longer term things. That's what we see from Joseph in the famine. He got a divine revelation that famine was coming, was able to start setting aside one-fifth. And I think that this is the time that if you're intentional and you're leading, that you're setting aside a portion of what you're making and you're allocating it. You're putting it in a form of that you can eat, that will give you power, that will sustain your family, that will protect your family. And that's just a good thing to have if there's storms, if there is power outages, regardless of what the national political situation is. If you go to the Ranger Handbook, if you just Google the Ranger Handbook and, you know, even just do like file type PDF, I might even post a link here when I get done with this, but you go and do that, then there's a section on sustainment. And I like using, I've talked about this before, but I like using the Army's supply class system for sustainment operations for thinking through how I am planning. And it's essentially what the military uses to do kind of long-term operations. But I like using it as a framework for how I plan for the family. So class one is rations, food, drinking water, like subsistence type things. You know, that we've talked about that, homesteading, water. I have a well and the ability to run the well, even if the power is out. There's backup pumps as well. We actually have somebody in our church that purchased one of those so that I didn't have to buy one right now. Class two, clothing and equipment. Camping is a really good way to shake out whether or not you have the ability to continuously survive and thrive, backpacking trips and things like that, getting the types of clothes and things that you need. The class three was the fuels, lubricants, hydraulic and insulating oils and preservatives. So that's what I mentioned earlier, that I didn't feel like I had enough lubricants for being able to maintain the generators. Class four is construction materials, just the ability to modify your current setup and make improvements to it if you need to. Sometimes you don't need to have all that stuff, like I said, set up, but having that ability where if you at least have the raw goods here to do things, like I said, that wire tail that I was able to wire up for our generator, kind of having those supplies. That's one of the reasons why I got that Goal Zero, I think it's the Yeti 4000 with the solar panels, is the ability. I'm not really trying to run my barn and run my refrigeration, but I want to be able to continue indefinitely to charge my battery power tools. And so that essentially allows me to indefinitely have my drills and my saws and my sawzall and you know, kind of continue to use those construction tools, because I have the ability to continue charging. And class five is ammunition, all types. Back to that three-gun guy that I have, the link in my bio, the ammo to do it. You don't need as much ammo as you think. I think basically being a really good shot and being competent with it, and then the other side of it about living in the right spot and finding the right county to be in and the right neighbors to have and the right kind of setup. That's the longer pole in the tent and that planning. The class six, health and hygiene products. I think this is probably one of the weak links in my own planning, but I go to church with some surgeons and some medics that have a lot more experience and a lot more of that. There's an Art of Manliness podcast. It's Off-Grid Medicine or Grid Down Medicine. That's a great resource. And I think I have that on my website too, as survival books, that the library that you should have of those survival books. So a lot of times just getting that information in a written form, not requiring batteries. So I recommend, I have all those books in hard copy. I haven't read them all. My sons are kind of reading them through and building lists of what I need to buy, but having that knowledge. The class seven is, I put this in my slides before because it's rocket launchers and tanks and parachutes and things like that, which obviously are way overkill for family. We're definitely not, don't have any of that stuff, unfortunately. You know, medical material and equipment, blood, there's a really good section of that Art of Manliness discussion about what level of care and having a plan for oxygen and blood and things like that in a grid down. His main critique was that all first aid books just say transfer to hospital, where in times of crisis, hospitals are often crowded, overrun, and things like that. So designing a plan that includes that not being an option and coming up with that. And so that's something we're in the middle of workshopping here in the community with some of the different medical professionals that we have. And like I said, that's where I feel like is a weaker link in my own class. 9 is repair parts, maintenance equipment. And then class 10 is like agriculture and economic development stuff. So I maybe dovetails back into the subsistence type of stuff. If you just look at the Ranger handbook and then do a control F or whatever and find the sustainment operations, it has that table of the different classes and what they are. And so using that as a checklist to go through and prepare and work your way through and get the things that are flushed out. And there's a lot of good resources kind of on all those different areas out there. I suggest you go through and do some of that planning at the household level so that you can be tactical, so that you can have what you need, so that you're not reacting in times of crisis, so that you and your family are in a position to lead instead of be dependent. For me, I've said that I think that the church needs to be taking the lead on this. This is where moral people are gathering together, people that understand how to take care of those that are less fortunate and that are weak and that are marginalized, but also able to defend and protect those, using those virtues, using that ability to think clearly. I'm looking for the church to lead. I'm leading a group in our church to plan through these kind of things. We're having a discussion. I think that a practical would be to find your 5 to 10 closest friends and get together and have a discussion about it. It doesn't have to be a whole tinfoil hat circle of people. It can just be regular families that are thinking, okay, you know, we just had a hurricane come through, took power out. What did you think you were missing? Make a list. What do you wish you would have had that you didn't? Okay. And then just kind of pool your learning experiences, make lists and continue to improve upon it each and every time that there is a crisis. So anyway, I got to go to bed, y'all, because I got to milk Sonnet early, 6:30 in the morning, so that I can be done milking, because I'm ridiculously slow at milking right now compared to my wife and her skill. I gotta get started early so that I can be done with cleanup before my phone starts blowing up with subcontractors and clients. Hopefully that was helpful. Hopefully that gave you some things to think about. And as always, feel free to maybe comment on the post about this space that's out there. If you have questions, or reach out to me at DM, get those downloads, share them with friends. Let's build tactical households that are focused locally, that are prepared to lead everywhere in times of crisis.